Good morning and welcome to Leadership with your host, Darrell Gunter, where we explore the many facets and best practices of leadership.
Good morning. Welcome to Leadership. I am Darrell Gunter and I am your host, where we explore all facets of leadership. Today, we're pleased to have in our studio Eric Frankel, who is president of Frankel Corporate Consulting. As you will recall, we had a great conversation last week with Eric. Eric, welcome back to the program. How are you doing this morning?
Doing great. Good morning, Darrell. Great to be back at Seton Hall on 89.5 FM.
I do appreciate the call out for those letters. Eric, picking up on our conversation from last week, we were talking about the five traits of successful leadership. And you had given us the five traits, which was you want to be unique, you want to be genuine, you want to be respectful, you want to be bold and taking risks. Well, what about emotional intelligence? Where does that fall within these five traits, or is that a separate trait that the leader should have?
Well, it's certainly separate, but I think it compartmentalizes all of those traits. Emotional intelligence, which they don't teach in school, which is something I think innate that some people have, but a lot of other people have to learn it. And, you know, some of the leadership development tools and some of the coaching tactics that are being employed more and more so in organizations these days are about being able to get the most out of an individual's emotional intelligence. We all have different backgrounds. We all grow up in different settings. We all are wired differently. And EQ is certainly a huge determinant of the way someone is going to be viewed as far as their upside potential in their organization, the way they're viewed by their colleagues, the way they're viewed in terms of their ability to be able to impact others, provoke the customer, and to be able to really make a significant difference in terms of their day-to-day responsibilities in an organization.
You know, I'm thinking as folks are listening to this program, emotional intelligence sounds like something that is used in corporate America. But quite frankly, it can work in small businesses everywhere. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. It can work in small businesses. It can work in the educational setting. You know, it's about someone who, you know, is much more comfortable being out in front of others. And it plays into managerial roles. It plays into someone who is an intangible player in an organization or in a sports setting where you just have a positive impact because you bring all of your A game every single day. You have a positive attitude. You're happy. You're go-lucky. You're not negative at all. You're optimistic versus pessimistic. It's a lot of traits that are not counterproductive to dragging other people down. Instead, it's very productive towards raising everyone around you to a better level because you just come to play and you're optimistic and you bring your A game every single day. So certainly in smaller organizations as well as larger organizations, emotional intelligence is huge.
You know, one of my previous guests, we were talking about a particular CEO who was probably bringing his organization down because he was very frustrated, and he would verbalize how frustrated he was and that he just felt that they were going to have significant problems. And she indicated that he just totally just lowered everyone's expectations in regards to what they could expect from him. So in that case, his emotional intelligence score was probably very low.
He's dragging everyone down, and he can't get... you know, I see with my children every single day. I mean, their difference in perspective in terms of their ability to look at things in a positive light versus a negative light is the difference between mom and dad's happiness versus frustration.
Right.
And it goes exactly to what you were talking about with the CEO. The CEO, in a way, is I don't want to say a parental figure, but certainly a leadership figure as it relates to their organization. So if he's negative and he's pessimistic, how can he expect his team to be able to go to work and play at their very best every single day? He's got to be able to change his behavior in order to make the organization sing.
Is it emotional intelligence? Is it understood in regards to what it is and how it can be a very productive tool? Or is it this a new concept that you see in the profession?
I think, you know, we all are meeting all different types of people every single day, especially leaders, especially people that are in sales and marketing that are, you know, extending themselves beyond the normal boundaries of just, you know, working with the same people or seeing the same people. So we can kind of sense that person really gets it in terms of who they're interacting with, how they're interacting with people. They don't handle every single person in the same way. And I think that's one of the keys. You know, it's very important to be consistent, but you want to be consistent where you are listening, where you're thinking about what the other person's needs are. And I think a big part of EI is your ability to be attentive to what the other person in front of you is looking for,
right,
and how they are dealing with a particular situation, and how you can help them in terms of being able to enhance their own performance, and collectively be able to make a better team and collaborate more effectively.
What about the manager who says, I have my management style, I am not going to change it for anybody, versus the manager like a Phil Jackson, if you will, of the Los Angeles Lakers, formerly Chicago Bulls, who really adapts his style around the player to motivate the player. Do you think the manager who says it's my way or the highway is someone who is a dinosaur? Or can they still exist in this new high-tech world that we're in?
I think the manager who does not change his or her ways is very commonplace. And that person can be very effective in a certain type of organization. But they've got to be lucky to be the right fit. Perhaps they're coming in and they're extremely sales-oriented and the company is very operationally focused, mm-hmm, and they can come in and they can breathe new life into sales and, mm-hmm, new life into marketing, and they can excite the customers, which the customer has never been, you know, partnered with and you know, involved in consultative selling in terms of really understanding the value that particular, mm-hmm, organization can deliver. So that particular situation, the dinosaur who is very sales focused but unwilling to change his ways, can be very effective. Now, in a different situation where that person is expected to be much more innovative, and maybe the company is strong in sales to begin with, and they need someone who's much more process oriented and someone who can really be a great leader and be able to realign the way the organization is being managed and the way they're being structured, that person is going to have a much tougher time. So I think the EI and emotional intelligence involved in being a leader in an organization, you are going to be better off the majority of the time to have, mm-hmm, someone who has strong emotional intelligence and is willing to look at the situation and change their style accordingly, versus the person who is very set in their ways. But, mm-hmm, that person who's set in their ways, if they're mm-hmm, a skilled leader, mm-hmm, certainly can be the right solution in the right situation.
Can you think of someone who is a public figure in business that demonstrates a very good emotional intelligence?
Yeah, I can think about a lot of clients who demonstrate that. You know, when I guess, you know, you look at, you hear of Jack Welch. And
that's,
you know,
the name that I was thinking about. Yes.
You know, I'm not exactly a student of Jack Welch, mm-hmm, but I know he obviously is very prominent in terms of the books he's written,
right,
and the innovative concepts he, right, has. He's always trying to challenge status quo.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that I've heard, you know, Jim Cramer, mm-hmm, from Mad Money always talks about, mm-hmm, this. He says he loves to listen to the conference calls each quarterly session after, mm-hmm, each quarterly earnings report. And what he gets from there is the most telling tale of what a company's performance is going to be over the course of the next 1 to 3 year period.
Right.
Because he hears directly from the CFO, mm-hmm, and the CEO in the organization what their perspectives are.
Mm-hmm.
Are they believable? Are they likable?
Right.
Do they have integrity? Are they honest?
Right.
Do they seem capable of being able to adjust based upon factors that may be outside of their control that are, mm-hmm, happening in the economy or that are happening in their industry. So it can be very effective to be able to tune in to the emotional intelligence,
right,
on that conference call.
Right.
So when you're looking at a Fortune 500 company and thinking of investing, seriously think about doing your homework in that particular manner. It's amazing we have the capabilities of doing these things, which we didn't before technology came about, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It's,
right,
amazing what advantages we have.
I've always felt that profitability begins with good leadership. And I have studied Jack Welch just a little bit. I used some of his methodologies when I was managing my organization at Elsevier. I ran a $385 million division and had a staff of 120-some people. And Jack Welch, he had this program where he had his A players, his B players, C players, and D players. And quite frankly, the D players, if they didn't improve, of course, were let go. The C players, if they didn't move up to be a B player, they also were let go. And he always wanted to take the B players to be the A players. But you always want to do it on a very, very constructive, in a very constructive manner, where it's based upon them doing what they're supposed to do, based upon the business. I also found that Jack was quite unique in the sense that he would train the high performers himself. He would do presentations and have discussions with them. So he was not only a leader who was tough but he was firm, but he was fair. But he also would reach down into the high performing folks and meet with them. He'll make time to meet with them, to do some training with them. So there's a lot to be said about Jack Welch.
That approachable factor, the fact that he wasn't so high up and high end that he just wanted to sit in his corner office and just, you know, collaborate with his executive team and not touch other people that were maybe two levels or three levels below. Certainly not his approach. Very attractive and obviously very impressive in terms of the results that he achieved.
Yes, very much so. So emotional intelligence, for those who are not familiar with emotional intelligence, what would be some of the first steps that you would suggest to acquaint themselves with? What is emotional intelligence? What are some of the tools out there that I can use to determine what is my emotional intelligence?
I developed a program about a year or so ago. It's called 10 Minutes to Change.
Mm-hmm.
And this concept is about me being able to sit with an individual, look at an information sheet they complete. It's being used prominently right now as a leadership development tool within both mm-hmm. midsize and larger companies.
Mm-hmm.
Sit with them for 60 minutes and take a look at what they think of themselves
right.
as individuals first and right. as professionals second. And a lot of people don't necessarily recognize how they convey and how they communicate
right.
and what they perceive their
right.
primary goals
yes.
to be in the business
yeah.
setting.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it takes someone who can be objective, who can mm-hmm. develop rapport with them, and who they're not necessarily entwined with. So it's not their boss. It's not someone who they have a lot to lose if they, you know, mm-hmm. share and open up about what's going on in their
mm-hmm.
world. It's kind of like a quick session that allows them to be able to open their eyes to what they do well
right.
and what they can accentuate in terms of what they need to improve upon as far as their emotional intelligence.
Now, 60 minutes is not a lot of time for typically folks are pretty challenging for them to look in the mirror and say, I need to improve here, for them to accept that. How do you get them to the point of agreeing with you? Not just to, of course, not to agree with you, but to say, you know what, Eric, you're right. I need to address point A, point B, point C, and get them to start to take action.
A lot of it is in the way it's communicated. The 10 minutes it's communicated to them is downloaded onto an audio CD, so they get to use it for motivation
mm-hmm.
again and again and again.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to hit on two or three salient points.
Right.
You
right.
can't overwhelm them.
Right.
And you don't want them taking notes during the course of the time. You want them really focused on what the conversation
mm-hmm.
is. And I'm mm-hmm. of the belief that a lot of times it can be complicated if I'm meeting with them for 2 hours or in five sessions over the course of 5 weeks.
Sure.
I want this one session to be a give-all, take-all,
right.
where I can be objective.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear what they're doing in terms of their job responsibilities.
Right. Right.
I can hear where some of their weaknesses are.
Yes.
I want them to
yes.
open up with me.
Yes.
And I don't want to say everyone is the same, because everyone is actually very, very unique.
Mm-hmm.
But I have, I guess, a unique gift, as I've been told,
right.
to be able to hit home runs very frequently
mm-hmm.
in terms of being able to understand
right.
and assess people and be able to communicate
right.
in a positive, nurturing, constructive way
mm-hmm.
exactly what they need to hear to
mm-hmm.
be able to impact their professional and career goals.
You know, I had a martial arts instructor, Sensei Raymer, who always would say, if you try to learn 1,000 techniques, you can't learn one technique. If you learn one technique, you can learn 1,000. And to your point, you find those two or three jewels of information that are important for them that will really help them transform their change. And what type of comments have you heard from them after? Do folks come back to you and say, Eric, you know what? That 10-minute session with you was just awesome, and now I'm flying. I'm doing so much better because of your program.
The best thing that people can tell me is it's great to hear the positive comments immediately afterwards. Eric, you're very smart. Eric, you really summed it all up very quickly. I can't believe how much in depth you got to understand me in a very quick period of time. But most importantly is what they come back and say to me 3 months later and 6 months later.
Yes.
And successes of where someone is looking for a job and needs to escalate their confidence, have more passion in terms of going after exactly what they need to go after, be able to differentiate themselves from the crowd and say, I got the job that I was looking for and I got it in a company that I'm very excited about. Or in the case where they're a business professional that's looking to escalate their skill set in the eyes of the people that are working around them in the organization, say they've really done a significant job in that, they've overcome some of their weaknesses and they've been able to
mm-hmm.
take some of the relationships that are hindering them
yes.
and be able to overcome
yes.
those obstacles. Those are the types of things that I want to hear, not immediately afterwards, but 3 months and 6 months later, that's when I've done my job and delivered significant value.
Now, what about the sequel? What about the person who says, you know, Eric, it's been a year since I've seen you. I got some other things I want to do. Do you have people who come back and take another 10 minutes to go to the next level?
We take another 60 minutes, then I'll convey the additional 10
right.
minutes to them. But absolutely.
Yeah.
The program is not designed. If someone's seeking a job, certainly you may want to come back 30 days later or 60
sure.
days later, and a lot of companies will buy the program in that manner.
Mm.
But if someone is in a leadership development tract,
yeah.
It's really designed to be, okay, one-time standalone. Let's work on these factors. Let's deliver some of the concepts and ideas to the executives in the organization, to the human resource leaders. But 6 months later and 12 months later, let's do the same type of scenario again. And companies love it because it's not intrusive on someone's time, and it's also very cost-effective, which is certainly one of the goals of any organization. Cost-cutting, cost-cutting, cost-cutting.
Right. And it helps them to, they measure success by the number of people who are successfully outplaced.
In terms of where there's downsizing,
yes.
absolutely. I mean, not only with the individuals who have been downsized in the organization, but to win the goodwill of some of the relationships that still exist within the organization. They can be troubled sometimes when their friends are downsized, and they certainly want their friends to have jobs and be happy and be able to mm-hmm. not have the money woes that unemployment tends to bring.
You know, when you look at large corporate America versus small corporate America, do you find that in your 10-minute program that the themes are the same, or are they different?
The themes are the same, but in larger corporate America, especially at the managerial levels, it's much more of a finite focus.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that want to work in smaller organizations or do work in smaller organizations typically are empowered to a greater degree. They have more decision-making capacity. I think innovation is, in many cases, rewarded a little bit more. Or I think the person that works in a larger organization often needs to focus on a succinct point of view or amount of workload or a succinct compartment of that particular organization. So it's just kind of scaled down in a larger organization. But when it comes to people, we get back to the emotional intelligence concept.
Mm-hmm.
People are people in larger organizations, in smaller organizations. You don't necessarily have the political challenges sometimes in smaller companies that you have in larger companies, but there's always some people you have to be able to figure out a different way to be able to deal with and treat and very, very important, you don't get dragged down by others' issues and others'
mm-hmm.
problems. If you can make them not a part of your mind focus, when you start going home at the end of the workday or thinking first thing in the morning about some people that are bringing you down, that's when you know you have to really work hard on resolving those specific relationships for your own benefit, whether
Absolutely.
It be a large company or a small company.
Absolutely. I tell you, it's the last thing you want to do is to bring problems home.
the stress, we have enough stress in life, and the stress of people and whether they're reporting directly to you or their colleagues are reporting above you, you need to make sure that you can minimize those negative relationships.
I'd like to switch gears for a second and talk about high potential employees. Define high potentials.
High potential employees, I think, have upside from two different respects. Number one respect is money-wise. What you are paying an individual, and I think we're seeing it much more so in today's society, in today's economy, has a big factor in the fact that if someone's making at market value or above market value, with downward pressure on compensation that we're currently experiencing, I don't know if I'd consider those people to be high potentials, especially if they are in non-sales oriented areas, if they're in operations or if they're in customer service. Perhaps if they're a manager and they're able to impact others, perhaps if they're in sales and they're impacting customers, impacting revenues, then they can be considered high potentials even if they're at or above their market value. The other factor is how much growth did they have to deliver in their organization? Are they a sponge? Are they soaking in the insight and knowledge of others around them? Did they go on their own and seek that knowledge out? Did they look to get information and almost be mentored by someone at a higher level or someone that's just been a little bit longer term in the organization that may have some knowledge or may have specific cognizance about a particular trait or subject matter that others don't? You always want to be perceived as the individual that is always looking for more information and more insight without doing it in a way that just seems like you're always buttering other people up. But to work hard, to be the first one in every single day, to be the last one out,
mm-hmm.
to always get things done on time,
right.
to be able to
right.
live by what you communicate, that's what makes a potential great leader, someone who also impacts people in a very positive way and shows some very strong signs of being an excellent manager.
Do you find a lot of corporations are investing in programs for their high potentials?
It's interesting because it has become a very prominent theme in larger companies. It's only going to become more prominent as time goes on. Companies are doing or expecting more with less right now in terms of the number of people in their organization. Mm-hmm. So they need to expect greater efficiency. And from a leadership development perspective, it is essential that they are looking to invest in the future leaders in their organization and to be able to invest in developing and training their employees so they are able to overcome the obstacles of, you know, maybe having less staff and being able to continue to strategize and drive revenues in the ways that things are expected. So companies are going to be fortunate over the course of the coming years because coaching is a theme that's only come about over the course of the last 15 years. Leadership development tools, I don't think necessarily existed 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. So kind of the same way software is emanating and formulating in all different ways, the same thing with leadership development tools. We are going to have various different forms of coaching, various different forms of leadership development. 10 Minutes to Change is a specific offshoot to be able to challenge the way leaders perform, to be able to enhance the way leaders perform mm-hmm. in a very finite, succinct, cost-effective manner.
What advice would you give to a CEO of a business or a general manager who has a high potential program? What advice would you give them in regards to how do you implement a program without alienating the folks who are not part of the high potential pool?
It's funny, I'm working on a program right now with a $500 million company, and that's one of their biggest concerns. They're very excited about the opportunity and the potential and the excitement that's going to be generated for the 15 people, but they're concerned about what happens to the people who are close but mm-hmm. no cigar.
Right.
And it's very important that that communication occurs with their direct managers and anyone that comes forth and says, I should have been a part of this program, that there is a specific set of tasks and goals that are outlined mm-hmm. saying, mm-hmm. if you do this over the course of the coming 6 months, over the course of the next year, there's an excellent chance that you will be part of this program over the course of the next year. And we very much admire the fact that you are looking for bigger and better for yourself in this organization, and that is going to get you far. So you need to be able to embrace the fact that they want more for themselves and they want to be able to grow within the organization, and there's always next year. Mm-hmm. It's not about what you're going to do for me over the course of the next 6 months or the next year. This person should be strongly considered for the program in future years and understand what they need to do to be able to make that happen.
Do you find that the folks that you're working with that they have a very strong program in regards to what their communicating what their strategy is, making sure that people have very good performance objective setting and that they have a performance review that really makes sense. The employee says, yes, I agree with that. How do you find the infrastructure within the groups that you deal with?
Actually, I think the answer to that is a definite no. Mm-hmm. I wish, companies certainly have the wish list of timely employee reviews, mm-hmm. yet somehow when it gets around to it, they're never done timely enough.
And why is that?
You get busy with other scenarios.
Is it I'm busy or maybe I don't want to deal with the conflict?
It's a great question. I like to think that they're busy. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, every mm-hmm. single day that passes where an employee is expecting a review, and in some cases a raise, every day that passes, they become more and more bitter. Mm-hmm. You can't do that to your employees. You have to be able to address those issues up front, on time, the same way when you expect a project to be done. And if someone promises it by next Friday, it's not done on Friday, and ends up being the following Monday or the following Thursday, you become more and more bitter.
Well, it's one thing I find is that over the course of my experience is that you have an employee with a particular personality who is a great promoter of what they don't do. they talk about all the things that they do around their colleagues, but when it comes to really getting the assignments done on a timely and accurate basis, they miss the mark. But because there's a vacuum of communication, naturally they're stepped up to the mic saying, hey, I'm doing a great job, and everybody thinks that they're doing a great job. But the manager is like, oh, I really meant to address the situation. Now I haven't properly addressed it. So therefore, this employee, when I have this discussion with them, it's going to be a very imbalanced discussion.
It's impossible for a manager to expect employees to perform at a high level if you don't communicate to them on a consistent basis what they need to do better. Simple as that.
Mm-hmm. So good leadership and good and one of the foundations of having a high-performing team is making sure that there's clear communication about our strategy, our goals, and expectations for each individual member.
Absolutely, and you need to do it consistently, and you need to do it in a manner that is not necessarily favoring one individual or another. Everyone needs to hear what they are doing right and what they are doing wrong, because no one is perfect.
Right.
And I think the more we hear how we can improve ourselves, whether you be at the executive level or whether you be at a high performer potential level, we make ourselves better. And the people that can hear those things probably are not going to be able to succeed in the organization over the long term and don't have the emotional intelligence that you had spoken about earlier, Darrell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you find that after a couple of 10-minute sessions that you can actually go back to the boss, so to speak, and say, you know, I may want to recommend a couple other sessions in regards to this area because there's some themes that are coming across as I talk with a few people. Have you found yourself in that position?
Yes, absolutely. And the 10 minutes to change sessions mm-hmm. can certainly morph into facilitation and working with an entire management team or an entire function to be able to cover themes that are coming about that I think everyone can hear and work together towards a common end goal.
Okay, very good, very good. And when we talk about your 10-minute session, what's next for your business? I mean, this is a really great tool. It's when I was introduced to you by our good friend Neil Posner, I went to your website. Wow, this is very interesting. I wonder how he's able to do this in 10 minutes. And now it's very clear to me. What's next for your business?
I've been doing business consulting for 15 years. The 10 minutes mm-hmm. to change concept was conceptualized by me in October of last year. So it's really new in terms of the whole idea. I have never been so excited about any idea that I've ever had. I've worked very hard in terms of the focus, in terms of getting it just right. And the last 9 months have been incredibly exciting. I expect to be able to scale it significantly with other life changers beyond myself, primarily as a leadership development tool or a low-cost alternative to outplacement. And I expect big, big things in 2010 and beyond for 10
absolutely.
Minutes to change.
And the website is www.10minute, it's 10minutestochange.com. We will have it up on our website so you can link right to his website. It gives us all something to think about. And the thing I like about the program is that it forces you to really think about what it is that you want to change and really focus on those one to two to three things. Instead of trying to conquer the world, let's start with baby steps. And I think this is a good program where it allows the individual to start with those baby steps, which allow them to get to bigger steps.
We've all been overwhelmed at times, and then there's times where we feel like, hey, we are organizing things in a manner that we're taking one step at a time. And if you overwhelm people with information, they're not going to be able to take the appropriate steps to positive change.
Eric, before we go, you know, I have my book and my quote, but is there anything else you'd like to share about your program that the audience would benefit from in regards to leadership?
It is very exciting. It's very different. And it is very empowering for the individual that sits across from me and has the opportunity to really look inward at themselves towards the opportunity to make themselves better. And I think with what's going on in the economy and the high unemployment rate, we all need to invest in ourselves and ask for our companies to invest in us as well to become the next great leaders, as long as that's what our sights are set upon.
Excellent, excellent. And what book would you recommend for our audience this week?
I'm going to take a step back. Instead of a book, I'm going to talk about just reading. I enjoy Inc. Magazine.
Okay.
That's wonderful good. Place to get ideas. Mm-hmm. Subscription rates are very low right now, and it's just fascinating reading about different entrepreneurs, their ideas, their perspectives. And whenever you read that information on a monthly basis, it's a great sit down, relax, and really be able to, come up with some different things that you hadn't thought about before.
Wonderful, wonderful. And what quote would you like to share with us this week?
Going to go back to the 1830s, a gentleman by the name of Ralph Waldo Emerson, who we remember reading in the our high school years. The last big financial crisis in the banking system in the United States was during the time he did a lot of his reading and a lot of his writing. A quote he had is, if I have lost confidence in myself, I have the universe against me.
Wow.
Can never lose confidence in yourself.
That's right. That's right. Wow, this has been a very exciting last 30 minutes with you, I want to thank you for coming back this week for this program. And I encourage everyone to take a look at Eric's website. It's www.10minutestochange.com, and think about what are the two or three jewels that you can improve upon. And by all means, give Eric a call. Well, we want to thank you. I'm your host, Darrell Gunter. And Eric, I'd like to thank you again.
Darrell, thank you so much.
Have a good day.
You too.